Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, that's where we got to go right now. Ahead of Monday Night Football, it feels like the perfect spot to bring on my former teammate and two-time Pro Bowler, two-time Super Bowl champion, Heath Miller, tight end extraordinaire. I affectionately call him Big Money. Big Money, we're glad to have you on the show. Happy New Year. Got to ask you about your former teammate, Big Ben. This could potentially be his last home game in Heinz Field. I wanted you to give us your favorite memory of your quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, hey, guys. How are you guys doing? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Heath. Good to hear from you.
Favorite memory for me, you know, it's hard to overlook probably Super Bowl 43. I think when Ben goes into the Hall of Fame, that's got to be his signature, the signature moment of his career. The 2-minute drive in the Super Bowl to win the game, the great throw to Santonio Holmes in the corner of the end zone. That's probably, I couldn't think of a better play to define his career than that.
Heath, just day-to-day, what was it like going to work with Ben Roethlisberger for all those years in Pittsburgh, the connection that certainly you guys enjoyed for quite some time there?
Well, I think for me, you know, watching football and being a fan of football, I realized how fortunate I was pretty early in my career to be a part of the Steelers with a franchise quarterback who was only 1 year older than me. So I kind of knew that he was going to be the quarterback for my entire career, and I saw his talent. And, you know, certainly when you got a franchise quarterback and a guy of his talent, you're going to be on a lot of winning teams, and we certainly were throughout my career and his career.
Heath, you were part of the National Football League for over a decade, and you've seen a lot of really good quarterbacks up close and personal. What are some of the intangibles behind the scenes that help separate Ben Roethlisberger from the rest of the bunch?
I think he's an extremely competitive person, and I think that that's kind of evident in the way he plays the game, especially early in his career, the way he would fight to the very end of every play. Chris, you were a defensive guy, so he was always tough to bring down in the pocket. I remember shrugging off guys his size or smaller guys and then heaving the ball 50 yards down the field. He just brought a never-give-up mentality, and, you know, anybody can say they're competitive, but, you know, he was the ultimate competitor, and I think that boded well for him throughout his career.
Kenny Angola Jr. here talking to former Pro Bowl Steelers tight end Heath Miller on the Goodyear Hotline. And Heath, if this really is the last home game here, we know a lot of people have speculated about Ben's future and what's gone on this season. What do you think ultimately ends up being the legacy there in Pittsburgh, a place that has had such great quarterback play and has had such a championship history?
Well, I think he's right at the top. You know, Terry Bradshaw obviously won 4 Super Bowls with that great 70s and early 80s teams. But, you know, Ben's right there beside of him as far as I'm concerned. He holds every record in Pittsburgh, and he also has 2 Super Bowls to go along with it. So, you know, he's one of the best, if not one of the greatest Steelers of all time.
Heath, I got to ask you this question, man, because this is one of your former teammates in Antonio Brown, who's now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but he's recently cut by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after what he did yesterday. How did you react when you saw the spectacle that AB created in that Jets-Bucs game yesterday afternoon?
For me, when I saw it, it was probably some sadness and disappointment for him. You know, it seemed – I haven't spoken to him in a while, but I was always a fan of AB. I enjoyed being his teammate, and I always wished well for him. And, you know, it seemed like things are trending in the right direction. Obviously, yesterday was just disappointment and sadness for me. And, you know, hopefully whatever transpired, you know, there's always more to the story, but whatever transpired, you know, he's able to work through and, you know, isn't too disappointed or regretful of what happened.
Heath, what was he like as a teammate in Pittsburgh?
Well, for me, he was a guy who came to work every day and was the hardest worker on the team. And he wanted to be great. And throughout the course of my career, I saw him evolve from a 6th-round pick, kind of a return guy, to the best receiver in the game as far as I was concerned. And that was a testament to his hard work and his dedication. But he was also – you know, he was a joy to be around. He enjoyed the game of football. He enjoyed playing, and you know, that smile and that exuberance, I think, permeated throughout the whole team when I was there.
Heath, because you play tight end, I wanted to ask you from your perspective about the evolution of the position. We're seeing them be focal points of the passing game, not afterthoughts as opposed to what we've saw in the NFL 20 years ago. So just your thoughts on the overall evolution of the position at tight end. I mean, right now we've got two tight ends in the National Football League that are in the top 10 in receiving yards. So, I mean, your thoughts on what you've seen from the position and how important it is in today's game.
Well, I think it's awesome to see the focus that the tight ends have in offenses now. Teams are throwing the ball more and more and more as opposed to when Chris, you and I first came into the league. But they're taking advantage of these huge athletes who are, you know, quite honestly, freaks of nature. And it's a tough matchup for defenses. And I think that's reflective of how well, statistically these tight ends are doing and what an impact they're having on games.
Heath Miller with us, former Pittsburgh Steelers Pro Bowl tight end on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Tomlin has been remarkable in his entire tenure as a Steelers coach. Never had a losing season, well documented, and a chance to close out the season with that still intact with two games left. What's allowed him to have that level of success, Heath?
I think he never loses the locker room, if that makes sense. You know, sometimes you see teams, they lose a few games and it just snowballs into 4, 5, 6, 7 in a row. But with Coach Tomlin, he always is able to effectively reach the players and keep them connected and keep them focused and motivated. And I think that's a testament to being a good coach. Not all coaches are able to do that. And I think that's one of his greatest strengths.
Heath, the AFC North is a division that we both spent quite a bit of time in, and it's kind of shocking to see the Cincinnati Bengals as the division winners and seeing Joe Burrow being able to do what he did in yesterday's game. But just your thoughts about this Cincinnati Bengals team and what you've seen from Joe Burrow in his sophomore season.
I haven't watched them a whole lot, but I think they've got a great quarterback and they've got one of the best receivers maybe in the game now, but certainly will be in the over the course of his career, in Ja'Marr Chase. And from a football fan, they're fun to watch. I watched them at LSU, and I was impressed. And it's pretty cool that they're reunited in Cincinnati. As a football fan, it's fun. Those guys are going to be great for a long time.
Heath, before we let you go, I'd be remiss. I mean, we mentioned your head coach, Mike Tomlin. I think the most quotable coach in pro football. Do you have a favorite Mike Tomlin coach that you'd hear every day from back in the day?
I haven't listened to him a lot recently, so I'll have to think back. But I know that, like, guys would place bets on how many times he would say certain phrases throughout the course of meetings. he has some catchy things that he says. It's not really funny, but I would always know. He would always say, we're going for the sticky Lombardi at the end of the year, or something like that. With the confetti raining down on us, we're going to be passing around the sticky Lombardi. And just the detail that he uses or the thought he has in explaining that was always unique, and he's definitely very quotable.
There's no doubt about it. We had this gem from him earlier on this year.
Never say never, but never.
So it is a reminder that when Mike T steps to the podium here, everyone be
that's
ready
pretty
here.
Cool. Yeah, that's right.
Heath, we appreciate you giving us some time today. Great to catch up with you, and hopefully we'll get a chance to speak with you again down the road.
All right, sounds great. You guys take care.
Awesome stuff. Again, two-time Pro Bowl tight end for the Pittsburgh Steelers and proud former Virginia Cavalier Heath Miller joining us on the Goodyear Hot. The sticky Lombardi here. It is only Mike Tomlin. Like he said, it's the level of detail, and you hear it each and every day. Like, I was only with them for one training camp, Chris, but the message never wavers. Like, Mike Tomlin comes in and knows exactly what he's going to give you every single day, right down to the sticky Lombardi.
Yeah, the sticky Lombardi. I'm having a hard time with that one, Gojo. It's like almost as hard to understand as Joe Judge's post-game press conference. Like, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, referring to the Lombardi. I mean, a lot of descriptive words about that trophy. Sticky is never one that I've heard. Very, very strange coming from Mike T.
I got some questions about what led to the Lombardi being so sticky, but we'll get to those on another day here. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Small business protection just got easier with more than 30 unique coverage options available. Progressive has you covered. More at ProgressiveCommercial.com. We want to hear from you. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776 on Antonio Brown and more. But coming up next, Chris asked Heath Miller about the Bengals. How far into the playoffs can we really see this team going after an offensive explosion this weekend? Next on ESPN Radio.
Never say never, but never.
Kenny Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. We're going to get back to your calls on Antonio Brown and more around the National Football League. But Gojo, we got to go here. Your man Joey B is just on one right now. I mean, setting the NFL record for the most passing yards in a two-game span, eclipsing Dan Marino's record of 874 yards, with posting 971 passing yards in the last two games. And yesterday, a performance, chucking it up for 446 and multiple passing touchdowns. Just an outstanding performance by him. Also an outstanding performance by Ja'Marr Chase to the tune of 11 catches for 266 and three TDs. All on the way to the Cincinnati Bengals for the first time since 2015, winning the AFC North and beating the Kansas City Chiefs at home in order to do it. So your thoughts on these Cincinnati Bengals and how impressive that game was for them yesterday?
Oh, it was lights out for them, Chris. I do have to ask, because we can talk about a lot of what happened on the field, but after we saw the swaggering, cigar-smoking Joe Burrow in the locker room, did you see the two pictures he took? The one with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, where he was flicking it up there ready to go, and then the one he took with, let's say, a couple of his more melanin-challenged teammates. We had a very tale of two Burrows in that instance here. So apparently this quarterback's got a little best of both worlds in him.
Yeah, that's called having a little bit of awareness and knowing your audience, something that we pride ourselves on here at Candy and Golick Jr. The more impressive part to the post-game celebration, though, was to get the gat dance that Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase brought back from their LSU days. I mean, they were getting it after it in that locker room, and it was a good scene for those guys because Joe Burrow flashed back in his postgame press conference to the beginning of the year and how he said the expectations for this team was that they were going to try to be a playoff group, and the easiest way to do that is winning the division, and admitted that he heard media members that cover the team laughing when he said that. So the fact that they were able to get that done and have that wrapped up before the end of the regular season, really, really impressed by what Joe Burrow has done in his sophomore year and what Zach Taylor has done in his third year as the head coach of that program, because this was a complete rebuild when he took over that job. And the fact that they are here in such a short period of time, relatively speaking, that's really, really impressive.
Yeah, this is Joe Burrow, sort of like the perfect version of Baker Mayfield, right? Remember, Baker came into the NFL with all the swagger and edge, and we haven't seen him be able to back it up consistently enough with his play. Joe Burrow's got the ability, and he's got that edge of, if you want to doubt me, do so at your own risk. He also understands what he's got in Ja'Marr Chase now, as they've kind of recreated that offense from LSU. This is Joe Burrow after the game talking about how easy life can be when you've got someone like one out there.
I said it in the post game on the field. Everyone knows that mean. You know, F it. Jamar's down there somewhere. I'm going to just throw it up to him. He's going to make a play.
Yeah, Ja'Marr was down there somewhere to the tune of 153 yards after the catch in this game. That's the most by any wide receiver in the last 15 seasons in the NFL. And Chris, while I looked at this and said, you know what, the Bengals have done a remarkable job of overcoming their biggest Achilles heel to still be able to have top-end success. Because I believe Joe Burrow in this game was sacked for the 49th and maybe even 50th time this season. He got hit a lot because ultimately that offensive line is still not up to par. But what T. Higgins has done, what Ja'Marr Chase has done, hell, Tyler Boyd is within 100 yards, I believe, of a 1,000-yard receiving season that will give them a third 1,000-yard receiver on that team. They've managed to recreate almost exactly what you brought Joe Burrow in here to do from LSU. I think they can win a playoff game or two, Chris. Ultimately, I think their issues along the line of scrimmage would probably keep them from winning the ultimate prize, but they have now established at some of the key areas here and given themselves a clear look at what they got to address this offseason to make them really dangerous here for the next few years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that offensive line is what caps their ceiling when it comes to whether or not they'll be able to make a playoff run and compete for a championship. But I'll have to admit this, Gojo. I was one of those people that were in the camp of they should take Penei Sewell if he's available. And I will admit on this show today that I was dead ass wrong for making that comment, because Ja'Marr Chase is otherworldly. Like, you were tweeting about it yesterday throughout the course of the game, and my response to your tweets was, this dude is beastly. Like, I mean, he just went beast mode on the secondary for the Kansas City Chiefs, and that hadn't been an outfit that was giving up a whole lot of yards. But and Steve Spagnuolo decided he wanted to go man-to-man coverage, and Ja'Marr Chase made him pay every single time. And it wasn't just bombs. There was a lot of run-after-catch action from Ja'Marr Chase, including that first touchdown that he had, where he pretty much housed it on a shallow slant in the middle of that defense. So it's really impressive to see what he's been able to do as a rookie, and it's clear that that connection, that special relationship, is what prompted the Bengals to go in that direction. And now you're already seeing the returns on that investment, because we're talking about this team having a division wrapped up before they even play in Week 18. Now, based on how the game ended, I'm sure Joe Burrow could use the rest, because he got nicked up at the end of that game and taken another hit. But I will say this. I think this team, if Joe Burrow is healthy, is going to be a team that nobody wants to play in Wild Card Weekend.
No, they're also a team that I think you're going to have to approach differently defensively. Like where we've talked about how teams address the Kansas City Chiefs that they were playing on the other side of the field, how teams address Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. I did not understand Kansas City continually down the stretch of this game, Chris. Once you'd seen Ja'Marr Chase was out here doing the built different stuff, continually putting their corners on an island to get absolutely roasted on a public stage by this guy here. It seemed like a mistake by Kansas City strategically, defensively, and it's something that I have a feeling if you're a team getting ready to face them in the playoffs, that's not a mistake you're going to make, letting Ja'Marr Chase be the one-on-one to bludgeon your defensive backs.
Yeah, especially on 3rd and 27, right, when Cincinnati is threatening with the game-winning drive. Why go man-to-man coverage in that situation? Like, I understand that Spags knows that they're at the fringe of field goal range and wants to bring pressure to try to, you know, make the ball come out of the quarterback's hands quickly and force a long field goal. But in that situation, knowing the game that Ja'Marr Chase was having, there's no way that you allow him to be in one-on-one coverage. That just cannot happen. That's on the coaching staff. Sometimes players have got to overcome that. But it was clear that there was nobody on that Chiefs defense that was going to be able to overcome the day that Ja'Marr Chase was having. It just wasn't happening in that game. There are a couple of end-of-game sequence play calling issues that we had, but, I mean, we've got plenty of time to get into that. But I will say this, impressive win for the Kansas for the Cincinnati Bengals against a really good opponent, the Kansas City Chiefs, that had won 8 straight. For them to be able to get that done, really impressed by that.
Yeah, program-building wins for the Cincinnati Bengals. Now I have to wait and see if they can overcome the biggest opponent in the history of the Bengals, their own front office and ownership, who have never been committed enough to winning for me to value this, because as many have pointed out, we have seen the Bengals set with impressive playmakers at wide receiver and quarterback, and we have seen it by a front office and an ownership group that seems committed to winning only up to a certain point. So hopefully this can be the beginning of something more, because as you mentioned it, that 30-yard completion to Ja'Marr Chase on 3rd and 27 was the first time an NFL team this season had successfully converted a 3rd down and 25 or more this year. The Bengals hadn't converted a 3rd down like that since 2009, so that group built different right now. Coming up next, though, we've talked so much about where these guys came from in college and some of the decisions that their peers have to make. As we look at bowl season now in the rearview mirror, where are we at with the current state of college football and its bowl year? We'll get to that after this word from Wendy's. Now, Wendy's, they know that a better breakfast starts with a better biscuit. Get a light and flaky Wendy's breakfast biscuit with bacon or sausage, egg, and cheese. These hot and buttery treasures, they come stacked with oven-baked Applewood smoked bacon or savory breakfast sausage, all with a fresh cracked egg and cheese. So you don't risk your biscuit someplace else. Get to your nearest Wendy's drive-thru during breakfast hours and go and get your Wendy's breakfast biscuit with sausage or bacon, egg, and cheese. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's. Back after this, Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. This is ESPN Radio.
Christine Lisi, developing story, a denial from Buccaneers coach Bruce Arians today that receiver Antonio Brown told him he was too injured to play against the Jets. Arians acknowledged it was difficult watching Brown erupt on the sidelines yesterday in such a chaotic way and leaving the field during the game. Also told reporters he had no regrets bringing Brown into the organization. The team did release Brown. NFL Week 17 caps off with the Steelers and Browns on Monday Night Football. Steelers needing a win to keep their slim playoff hopes alive. To do that, they'll need to stop Cleveland's running game, which won't be easy, explains former Steelers QB Charlie Batch.
I don't know how effective that this Steelers defense could be. The Browns, they average 144 yards rushing a game. Of course, they're going to attack it, and if they're able to get that running game going, that will allow Baker Mayfield with that play-action game to get going. So I just don't know how they get it done and be able to stop it, because that's something they haven't been able to do through 15 games thus far.
Charlie Batch on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Monday Night Football, the main broadcast at 8 Eastern on ESPN TV. The Manning Cast on ESPN2. ESPN's FPI currently gives the Steelers a 4% chance to make the playoffs.
Kenny and Gola Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, we're in the middle of bowl season in college football, and I feel like around this time every single year, we usually have debates that turn into arguments or devolve just into people in rooms yelling loudly at one another with no one actually listening to what they're saying, because obviously the conversation around opt-ups, opt-outs always pops up, and about players that are potentially looking toward their futures with their football careers with an eye toward the NFL, deciding that they're not going to play in bowl games, or we have horrific injuries that take place that remind us of the nature of the sport and why it might be in best interest of certain kids to make the decision not to play in their team's bowl game and get ready to start being a professional football player. So no matter what side of the argument you might side with or you might land on, it feels like that debate, that conversation happens every single time without fail during bowl season. And of course, this bowl season didn't disappoint us.
No, it certainly didn't. And I think especially with college football, man, like when it comes to the format, there were people beefing about, hey, is the college football playoff all of a sudden not serving its purpose anymore? The bowl games matter enough here. You mentioned the opt-out seemed to be at the heart of this. There's always something, and we know a lot of this conversation around the opt-out specifically, because when everyone looks at the current bowl format, they say the rest of the bowl games have become meaningless outside of the college football playoff. They blame the playoff. They blame a number of things. Our colleagues Kirk Herbstreit and Desmond Howard on College Game Day went so far as to talk about the current generation of players and say, you know, these guys don't love football the same way. They're, you know, the word entitled came up here. And Chris, I respect them because they're our teammates, but I disagree completely with what these guys had to say on that subject. Just because, I mean, you played football before me. I played football 10, 15 years ago at this point at the college level here. There are plenty of guys I played with that didn't love football for the same reasons that everyone else always did. Football means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And so I think we always get caught up in this generational thing where we look at, because it's different, it's somehow lesser. And to me, that's just always going to be missing the mark.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% on that one. I'm not going to sit here and say I know the reason why every guy decides that they want to lace them up and put on pads and cleats. But what I will say is, when you get to the highest levels of the sport, I mean, because of the commitment that it takes in order to be good at it, I find it hard to believe that there's not something that makes you passionate about being able to play this game. There's not something that draws you to this game to the point where you say you love what you do every single day. So for them to question a player's passion or their heart in that way, I just think it's a little bit out of pocket. Now, we respect our teammates. They have a high football acumen. And, you know, we can respect them, but we can also disagree with their takes on this.
Yeah, I just think, Chris, the bigger conversation around this, around the bowl thing, is like, we can look at the structure of all this. Even if we were in the old BCS championship era where it's just two teams playing, that just means we'd have two more teams full of guys that were getting ready to make business decisions, right? Like, we can't have a conversation about the current landscape in college football without acknowledging that it has changed drastically, right? Like, the money that's been built up around this. Like, I saw someone mention it. When Herbie and Dez were playing football in college, there were 18 bowl games. We got 43 of those now. So the relationship with that is going to be different because there's more opportunities for everybody here. Coaches are making more money. Players have been able to become professional earlier than ever. Part of it out of necessity because the recruiting process has changed so much. All of this has forced these guys, because of the way the game has changed around them, to look at this different. And so I can't look at them in circumstances I never had to deal with and say, just because you're doing things differently in those circumstances that I did in an entirely different situation, that you're somehow lesser than I was.
Yeah, I think we're just in a different era when it comes to players' awareness and their agency and understanding how valuable they are to these institutions that they're suiting it up and playing for. I think guys recognizing their worth and making decisions in accordance with that in their future, you can't begrudge a player for doing that. This game is far too dangerous. We understand all of the things that come along with playing it. Like, for a guy to want to maximize his athletic ability and his earning potential, I can't be upset at them making a decision along those lines. You cannot like it in terms of what it means for their respective team now, but you can also have to understand the realities of the sport and the realities of the business of football. And I think that that's the conversation that we're having. That's the part of this that people are missing out on, because whether those players play or not, you're still talking about these colleges, these schools getting paid boatloads of money to be a part of these bowl games and be a part of these television deals. So I don't think we can be upset at the players for making the decision to try to do everything that they can to maximize their earning potential when it comes to their athletic career.
No, and even more so, Ken Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Chris, they've seen the cautionary tales of when it can go bad, right? They watch what happened to Jalen Smith at Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl against Ohio State. They watch what happened to Jake Butt at Michigan and how it changed their professional futures here. And they've also seen, hey, Ja'Marr Chase opted out an entire season, still seems to be doing pretty well. Penei Sewell, Micah Parsons, there have been enough examples in public places for these guys to say, hey, that value proposition of sitting down and preserving my health so I can maximize my earning at the spot that will let me earn. Chris, that to me seems to be the difference. Awareness is the right word that you used. Getting ready for the bowl game, I was calling, we got a chance to talk to Mac Brown, who's been around college football for a long
forever.
Time.
Forever, yeah.
And I mean, who was also a part of it on the media side here at ESPN. And he said, relative to the transfer portal, he goes, it's a different time and place in college. And so it is our job as coaches to make sure we're doing the best job of getting young people in positions to succeed here. And if we can't, we help them find a place to go where they can maximize that. It was a very refreshing take on this. That can be applied to college football as a whole. If you want more players to stick around for bowl games, if you want this to be something that they're less inclined to sit out, it's going to have to be incentivized now, because the cat's out of the bag relative to all the money in college sports. It is a pseudo-professional league for pretty much everyone but the labor involved. And so if you want players to stick around for more of these bowl games, there's going to have to be likely financial stipulations attached to that, or else it's just not going to be worth it for them at this point.
Yeah, but what we can't do is character assassinate. When I talk about character, I'm talking about the sports character. We can't character assassinate these kids for making a decision.
Oh, no.
That is about the business of their careers. We can't do that. And I feel like those are along the lines of some of the critics that happen to be out there when it comes to guys making a decision to opt out of these bowl games. It's not that they don't love the game of football. It's not that they're not passionate about it. It's just that they recognize that there also could be a benefit for them and their families financially if they make the decision to sit out this game, knowing that their football careers are going to continue when they go to the professional ranks, and they're going to be able to monetize their athletic ability. So, you know, when we talk about the game of football at the highest levels, we know that there is a short career span. There's a short, finite period of time that you have to maximize your earning potential when it comes to your athletic ability, and athletes have that understanding now more so than ever before in the realm of college football. And so I think that's what you're starting to see athletes do. They're starting to exercise their rights and make decisions that are in alignment with the best long-term interests of their careers.
Yep. The game has changed and the players are responding. And I think you and I agree, good on them for being able to get what's theirs in the middle of this, because Lord knows that everybody else is. Speaking of paying the bills around here in the midst of college football players are making moves by opting out of some bowl games.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports.
If that's not poetry, I don't know what is. But coming up next, speaking of college football poetry, we got to revisit the moment that I was a part of that led to me not only ticking off an entire nation, but an R&B legend in the process. My apology next on ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. This is ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. Talking about Antonio Brown. But Gojo, we also got to talk about something that I saw during bowl season that I thought was shocking and appalling. And I'm not quite sure why I'm so shocked by it, because you kind of gave me a heads up that things could be going in this direction with the game that you were assigned, the bowl game that you were actually calling. It was in my parents' hometown, Charlotte, North Carolina, and it just feels like it was one of those things that's hard to explain, but after it happened, I'm the one that's forced to defend you with all of my family and friends hitting me up on social media, people texting me, people calling me and saying, what the hell is wrong with your partner, Mike Golic Jr.? when he's gotten to the point where he's offended a legend like Dionne Warwick, what the hell is he thinking about?
Yeah.
This is your time to be able to explain that, my friend.
Yeah, so for anyone who missed it, myself, Anish Shroff, and Taylor McGregor were on the call for the Duke's Mayo Bowl in Charlotte, North Carolina. North Carolina and South Carolina played. It was a great game that Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks ultimately won. And we thought we would lean into a game that was going to feature the winning head coach getting a Mayo bath. Instead of a Gatorade bath after the game, the winning head coach, Shane Beamer, was doused with mayonnaise. And so we thought on the broadcast we'd lean into it. And I said, all right, well, we see one of these internet lists of all these weird foods you could eat with mayo. And so Oreos, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and donuts ended up being on the menu. And you mentioned it. This is what, first off, what it looked and sounded like as we, in the middle of a game, decided to have snack time courtesy of our friends at Duke's. I thought he was going to puke.
It looked like it. It looks like it. 1,000%. When he stops chewing, that's the moment that I think it's all coming back up, man. So kudos to Anish for being able to hang in there and finish off the ball game. But, man, for you guys to take it there and actually experiment like that, I mean, I got to give you credit with the courage part of it, but it's just, I don't know, man. I don't know that I would have had the bravery to be able to do something like that, especially knowing that I'm responsible for calling a game.
Chris, I will say this. The nicest text I got was from ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes, who will join us at 5:30 Eastern today, who said, it is remarkable that we managed to call the remainder of the drive after that. Somehow, some way. I will say this, though. I've been asked this a million times since then, Chris, because this went weirdly viral in a way that I was not fully prepared for. It all tasted fine. Like, people think I'm shilling for the bowl game on that one. It really, like, if you asked me to eat any of those again, I'd have zero problem with it here. And quite honestly, I don't think any of you guys would either. I think you'd have a perfectly great time with it.
Yeah, I don't know that that's my preferred method to fly. You know, I'm not a mayonnaise guy anyway, so to be able to compound the issue by putting it with something like Oreos, where it seemingly doesn't go, and it's not a natural condiment for it, I don't know, man. I can't get on board with that one, man. So for you to say that it really wasn't that bad, I don't know, man. You need more people because I just don't believe you.
Well, now, this is the real crux of this. So, again, this gets clipped and ESPN and everyone else sends it out here. The two biggest reaction points that I got. First, the entire country of Australia. James Matthey, some news person, some writer in Australia, put up an article with the headline, "Commentators' disgusting on-air act proves that the United States is beyond saving." Like, I'm the reason.
Great headline. That is just an objectively great headline.
That's a great headline.
He sort of nailed that one here. The New York Post is somewhere even applauding that one. But the second one I was not expecting, in addition to, again, an entire nation of really an entire continent of people in Australia, which, by the way, you guys eat Vegemite. Like, let's have a real conversation about throwing stones from glass houses here.
Yeah, and then the other part about it is, too, of all the things that have happened in the last 2 years, that moment is what they felt like was where the United States has clearly gone wrong. That moment where you decided to dip an Oreo into a mayonnaise jar. Of all the things they could have pointed to, I'm just saying.
Stunned by that one. Even more stunned, though, by Miss Dionne Warwick, an R&B legend. Again,
the queen.
As someone pointed out to me, she got 5 Grammys, I got no Grammys. I can't compete with that. But she quote tweeted this video and added my boss, added ESPN, and said, I need both of these young men, first off, thank you, to take paid leave and really think about what's going on here. Miss Warwick, if you're listening right now, which 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, we'd love to hear from you. First off, thank you for showing mercy and opting for paid leave on that one. If you're any of my bosses listening, she said you got to pay me. Those are the rules. Two, I can't apologize for this, Chris. I can't apologize for doing what felt right in that moment, for doing what I felt was in the best interest of the listening and viewing audience on this one. I apologize that Miss Warwick was offended in this instance, but unfortunately, I cannot apologize for doing what I felt was right in that situation. I hope her and I can still be friends at some point here, but this is just something I had to do. I had to follow through, man.
Well, you know, when she hits you with the young man, she's really disappointed,
yes.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Anytime that generation hits you with the young man, like, they really want you to be introspective and reflect on where you've gone wrong. So I mean, that's one of those things. That's saying something where Dionne Warwick feels like she has to chime in on social media and actually get you on a straight and narrow path.
If she had told me I needed Jesus, we really would have been up bleeps creek on that one. Coming up next, are the Steelers up bleeps creek heading towards the playoffs on ESPN Radio?
Never say never, but never.